thanks, Johannes, for inviting me to this great event. I think it's really wonderful to have us all think about sex and technology from very different backgrounds. I really think those events are quite rare, especially rare, and it's difficult to get funding for them, and so I hope that at least ours can keep going. I used to be involved in a little bit similar events in Amsterdam around internet pornography. I was the curator for several years of an event called NetPorn, and we were also trying to combine art, artistic perspectives, activism, industry, and academia. And I think it was very invigorating and nice because you could hit a very imaginative realm, which is almost impossible in all these separate institutions, I think. So I've really, really enjoyed ours today and yesterday night. It's really been amazing. And so I just wanted to well, it's just overwhelming, actually. But anyway, I'm going to talk about China, and I live in Hong Kong. I've lived there for 5 years, and so I'm writing a book about the Chinese internet and pornography, and there's very little work on that, actually, in China. I think this is the second book that will appear in China about pornography. And so I just have to say that this research has not been very easy, actually, because porn is actually totally banned and is therefore underground. And so, you know, bear with me as I'm presenting my findings. You can find my work on my blog that has a lot of very boring daily writings in it, libida.org. So porn, to some extent we're talking about porn activism all day long. I think we have been talking about that. You can ask the question, is this a European or, you know, Euro-Anglo kind of practice, movement? Of course, when you write about a culture like that, this is a very, you know, important question to go through. It's like, how can you apply all these things we learned today, all these approaches, can you just bring that to China? I would have loved to do that, but it's almost impossible, of course. For instance, I kept thinking about this Fuck for Forest. I think that collective and website is probably known to you. This alternative porn site, where the people of the site actually make pornography, and they upload photography and videos, and they actually make money through their website, and the money goes through different environmental causes. So I think this is a very kind of interesting example of European activism. I think all European, like Western type porn activism. Here's some of the examples of the photography. It's a lot about outdoor pornography. Tom and Fiona are the owners of the website, and they say they live in a technological society. Documenting sex for us is not different than documenting any other experience. Many people like to film everything from weddings to funerals. We like to film sex. So, of course, if you would think of that kind of ideology, that kind of premise, then you can, of course, apply that to any other type of culture as well. Because this movement is a kind of surveillance culture. New types of exhibitionism and voyeurism have indeed traveled all over the world and have been affecting all these different cultures, such as China. So, yes, we can think about the Chinese activist porn movement as well. And that's what I want to talk about today. So the liberator of the movement, her name is Sona Ao. Does anybody know her? Yeah. So she's actually Japanese. So it's quite fun. The liberator of the movement is Japanese. The mascot is the grass mud horse. And then, you know, in my previous title, I talked about synchronization, which is the fact that there's new types of DIY and amateur porn happening in the Chinese internet, which is totally rare because, like I said before, officially there is no porn in China. It's all, officially it's all banned. And then lubrication, I think that I'm also very interested in the contribution of bloggers and artists to the sort of Chinese porn culture, because to some extent, of course, if we can liberate porn in China, where does that bring us? It really doesn't bring us to the kind of open-minded, tolerant, female-friendly perspective that we've been promoting here all day, perhaps. So there we go. Yeah, a little bit about the political background. There's many compulsive campaigns in China against what they call the cyber yellow disaster. When I talk about China, it means mainland China, by the way. Maybe that's not completely clear, but I'm mostly talking about what's going on in the big China, even though I live in Hong Kong and these two cultures have a very different background, very different laws. But in China, there's a lot of compulsive campaigning for the promotion of a harmonious family and society. And also, it's been known that there are many netizens being hired by the government to post propaganda and spy on, you know, sensitive materials, political dissidents, as well as any type of porn. And this is called the 50 Cent Army. So the most recent campaign is called the Campaign Against the Three Vulgarities. And so the Chinese government launched warnings against distributing or creating three types of vulgarities. Three types of art or media that could be considered vulgar. And the first one is cheap, art that's cheap. Second one is art that's tasteless. And the third one is that art that's vulgar. And I'm just translating from these Chinese government bulletins that we get to read on a weekly basis, right? So it is very vague. I can't really make it more concrete because that's how they get into your mailbox. Yeah, so this is the last kind of campaign that the mainland has issued, that people cannot be engaged in these three types of vulgarities, which means they cannot be engaged in anything much at all. I mean, that's really like a very effective way to control any type of suspicious art or political activity. So the government says that all pornography will be banned, but meanwhile, it's also true that the whole porn industry has grown in China, and this is a visualization of the net porn industry in mainland China. And it was actually, I was really lucky as I was writing my book, this article appeared by these scholars. It's called A Peep at the Pornography Web in China. And so they actually came out with a visualization of an existing industry. And so now we can no longer deny that a lot of people in China are actually consuming pornography. There's not a lot of production because you cannot legally produce pornography in China, but there's a lot of consumption. As a matter of fact, China is the third largest consumer of pornography in the world. And so this is the crack in the system for me to exploit, the crack between the official ban and the official denial and then the existence of the expansion of an industry. And so I'm not so much favoring that the industry will grow or expand, but I'm more interested in the culture, the sex culture, or the more radical media culture that can grow alongside the expanding porn industry. Yeah, so here's Sola Aoi, one of the most famous porn stars, Japanese porn stars. She's the one who brought down the Great Firewall, because she managed to convince a lot of Chinese people to jump over the Great Firewall. So, you know, China has a Great Firewall, and most most communications are censored or deleted. A lot of websites are banned as well. For instance, a lot of what we just talked about, what May just talked about, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, YouTube, all of them are banned. All these social networks, all that stuff that excited us, that excites us so much, as a matter of fact. I mean, I could see that in the discussion. It's a huge development, right? And so it's just, you know, in 2009, one by one, all these networks were closed down. That's what they have. So I do want to say that they have their own version. So clones were made of these websites, and people have been using those. But those are very strictly monitored. Those Chinese versions of the social network are very strictly censored and monitored, and they definitely also don't go beyond the firewall in some sense because of the language, for instance. At least some of the networks we're talking about have multiple languages, so that people in different cultures can participate in different languages, basically. So there's a bit of a cutoff, but then, you know, Chinese people are craving pornography, so porn and porn stars are helping people to just find ways to jump over the great firewall through different ways. Yeah, technically speaking, there's different ways in which this can be done. Okay, a question.
Can I comment maybe a little bit on the motivation of Sola and how she sees porn?
I think she was just trying to get business, actually, but then she became this people's artist. They call her the people's artist, actually. I was just going to explain, she's actually on Twitter. You can follow her on Twitter. She's very active on Twitter. She has, like, I don't know, 30,000 followers or something on Twitter, and most of them, or 70% of those, are Chinese men. And so I think she was trying to get business and promote her blog and promote her movies, but also she's cosmopolitan, so she's interested in Chinese culture and different cultures. And so her correspondences with her fans have a very authentic, natural component as well. And so I think that what happened was that she convinced many people to access Twitter, the banned website Twitter. They became her fans, and then she started getting invitations to go to China to promote her work. So that's more important now. Not only that she has a Chinese following on Twitter, but that she actually became a celebrity in China. And so this is quite called the liberator. Yeah, like she's really pushed the whole porn debate to some some other level that I think other people couldn't get to for some reason. I'm going to actually show you a little clip of her work, one of her works, just to have a little break from talking. Yeah, I know.
Audio cable.
Yay.
Where? What?
Yeah, here, in front.
Ah, okay.
Thank you.
Which one? Can see from here.
This one. No, the red one, right?
No, the red one is recording.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so this is just the opening, and I'm going to move a little bit along a little bit.
Which one is going to be this way?
Little sample of her work, and So she's one of the liberators of the Chinese internet. And then I say, but okay, we can think like that, but then there are some problems with that because of the fact that. Just the fact that there's this hegemony of Japanese porn movies in China, and there's very little variation on what kind of stories they actually bring. This is the sad news, that what we've just seen, that movie that starts with a massage and kind of soaping session and then turns into a rape after about eight minutes, is actually quite common in Japanese pornography. This is really the mainstream of Japanese porn, and it is always more or less showing a similar story of a woman being dominated or being forcefully convinced to have pleasure. Yes, I mean, the women have pleasure, they have orgasms, they enjoy, but they cannot meet that process. They have to be submissive, they have to be told or forced into pleasure. And I looked at quite a number of the most popular Japanese movies in China, and they do actually tell that story over and over again. So it's about dominating and infantilizing women. I've interviewed a lot of people who watch porn, a lot of men in China, and other scholars have done the same thing, and yes, basically we will get the same stories from them as they love Japanese porn, they don't want anything. Who said that America makes the greatest porn? You said that. That is just not true. I mean, every Chinese person you talk to will disagree with that. I mean, Japanese is the greatest porn. And they want to see women being dominated, actually. They're very upfront about that, and you can do a lot of analysis of that, which I don't want to do, actually. I think it's great that people can enjoy that, but then some people are being left out, which is the women, right? The female consumers. The fact that there's no Chinese, there are not Chinese stories, they're Japanese stories. Did you have a question?
I just had an observation.
Yeah.
I need a microphone! The archive must not be
here. So I lived in Cambodia, and there was a Japanese exchange student there, a girl, and she remarked at one point that basically most of the porn in Cambodia is sort of like it's either through like mobile phone or like crappy VCDs, but it all comes from Japan. And so she got some really weird she would occasionally get propositioned by these Cambodian guys who just sort of, yeah. Like, the whole understanding of Japanese sexuality was informed by the Japanese porn movies, and so they just assumed that all Japanese girls were like that.
Exactly. Or they weren't all Cambodian girls as well.
What? No, she was a Japanese
okay.
exchange
because,
student.
All right, adding that, of course, Chinese males expect Chinese women also to some extent to fulfill the same role.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely also true. So, and then I started to think about another lineage into this question, the single question of my talk, which is porn activism. And the mascot is the grass-mud horse. Has anybody heard of that funny? You've heard of it. Okay, so... species of the alpaca. It was one of 12 animals that was invented. Their names all sound very close to profanities in Chinese. This happened about 2 years ago. It was actually, it started as a protest against the 2009 Greenland Youth Escort controversy. And so this is really amazing that this funny, surreal animal was created, came to life on the Chinese internet to protest internet censorship. It was so surreal and weird that the government didn't know what to do about it, basically. But they did ban it. The fighting actually banned it. They banned the animal, the theme song, and the entire internet meme is actually officially banned, which is really funny. So here's some more examples of it. It just all the language, the names of these animals all sound a lot like profanity. So, for instance, Sayonina is like "fuck your mother," yeah. And then they start playing with the language, because you also have to understand that this language, vulgar language, I talked about the three vulgarity, all vulgar language is banned from the Chinese internet. You cannot use the names of genitals, for instance, on the internet. It is deleted automatically, yeah? So it's very powerful for them to use vulgar words. And so let's just have this theme song. Do you know about China Digital Times? Oh, okay, I didn't talk to you about that. But yeah, so they put it online with some explanations. So let's listen to the... I don't know what to...
Wrong.
Horrible.
I don't know what it
means. Yeah.
Hold the
microphone against the speaker. Oh, wow.
What the?
Okay, I'm trying to give you some sound here.
Now I see that it sort of fits into the Oz project quite nicely. Because it's weird and surreal and imaginative.
I don't think it fits into an Oz.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, many variations of this song are available on YouTube. You can listen to that. There's a very beautiful rap song, but we don't have time. Then Lady Green Dam was invented. She's this bossy government official in green uniform, and she preaches harmonization and synchronization endlessly. And she's the only one who can tame the grass mud horse. And she forbids you to watch Japanese hentai in this cartoon. You can see that she's coming out with her own parties, and then she gets sucked right into the screen as she's doing so. Okay, so yeah, I was just saying that the porn landscape in China is very Japanese dominated, and so we have to look for Chinese porn, examples of Chinese porn. So there's a new wave of DIY porn, and they are all named after Yeah, they all end in the label gates, like doors or gates. After USA Watergate scandal, actually, which is also a bit funny, I think. So rather than talking too much about it, I'm going to go show you one of these as well. No, it's okay. No, no, there's no sound here. Okay, I'm just going to look at that. I'm just forwarding it all again because it's only in the middle of it that it becomes really funny. Yeah. Okay, here is one of the famous Chinese porn movies that I dug up for you. It's not moving, is it? Okay, there you go. I wonder actually, I'm not so familiar with if this type of porn that is shot in computer rooms and classrooms, if that's very popular on the West, on the internet right here.
It's a
show. But it's small.
It's usually kind of pseudo.
Pseudo, yeah. But this could be pseudo as well. I think I'm not sure because of the lady there. She's sort of sitting there doing her work, and so that's quite suspicious in a way. But on the Chinese internet, this is now getting really big. This is like a major trend, and I think it does fulfill that function of giving Chinese people an erotic sexual identity. And it's often made by very young people, like school students. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think if you talk about sexualizing space or the eroticizing of space, I mean, it is creating the idea that it could be happening everywhere, and that's how they're categorized. These videos are kept in archives according to the space where they happen, the specific city, and then inside the city, the university, and then which computer lab, and so they have a very neat kind of archiving system, so it creates the idea that all spaces are being sexualized in China, that despite all this censorship, and this, yeah, right, there you go.
Is he watching porn?
Maybe he's watching porn as well.
You're compiling code.
He's checking his position.
So, again, for me, this is just sort of like evidence that there is Chinese pornography and that people are taping each other, gazing. So they are internalizing also the surveillance mechanisms of the state and playing with it, making it bearable. And so my students basically started forwarding this movie to me, and it was like, wow, we do have Chinese porn, because they knew I was writing this book, and I kept telling them I can't find Chinese porn, and I have to write a book about it. Yeah, so it started with images, like some strange images they found, and then they found videos and so on, and so then slowly I started getting some kind of basic archives of Chinese pornography. The second example is this strange movie. I'm going to grab a chair, actually. Which is an amateur feature movie. And it translates as Country Uncle and Country Girl. It's kind of a very interesting and also a bit disturbing movie. It's basically the story of a country uncle, which is a farmer, And so it's, you can, I'll show you a little bit of the scene. But basically, a farmer and his wife are having sex in the countryside, sort of, you know, beautiful and scenic and peaceful kind of movie. But then suddenly this weird character shows up, Uncle Chow. And Uncle Chow brings a lot of trouble, and he basically, he sees a daughter of the farmer, and he also starts threatening the farmer, saying that the farmer owes him money. And so the farmer is scared, and basically what he does is he promises his daughter to Uncle Chow. He says, okay, Uncle Chow, you can have my daughter, you can marry her. Uncle Chow marries the daughter, and then, but you know, he's still not satisfied. He's just kind of an aggressive character, and he has a gun also. So at one point he shows up again, he visits the farmer, and he pulls out his gun, and he gets really mad. And I mean, in the background of the story, there is the fact that his own mom was actually raped, and as a result of being raped, she was actually killed by other people in the village. So it's a very sad story. So Uncle Chow has this traumatic history, and so he can't control himself. He has to basically act it out onto other people. So basically, he visits the farmer, and he wants to do something really nice, and he forces the farmer to have sex with his daughter, which is his wife. And so the farmer starts having sex with his daughter, and then Uncle Chow actually has sex with the farmer's wife. So it's actually a bit complicated, but in the end of the movie, they're all fucking together. So even though this movie deals with a lot of strange taboos like incest, rape, and wife swapping, and it's definitely, again, one more time, confirms this heteronormative and patriarchal ideology completely, but you know, at least in the end, it's ambiguous, and they're all having sex, and it's a happy porn movie in a way. So I was thinking I should show you that. Yeah, that's what it is. It's the harmonious fucked up family. The fucked up harmonious family. Okay. Well, that's just the beginning of.
老婆，我看你跟往常不一样。
有什么不一样嘞？
Okay, moving now to the harmonious family scene in the end. So you can see they're all fucking together. Farmer is fucking his daughter. Uncle Chow is fucking farmer's wife. But it ends in orgasm. They're having sex. That's Uncle Chow.
You can tell, right?
Yeah. He just threw away his gun because he actually used his gun to get to that point. Okay, just a little snippet of one of the first Chinese porn movies ever. Da, 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 da. So again, it was quite nice for me to get a hold of it. And through my students again, they dug it up. And it took us a long time to actually find it and download it. And finally, I could have a look at it. And then somebody translated all the subtitles for me. Until I... Peter Newton.
What's it?
Peter Newton.
Yeah, sure, really. And then we put the pieces together. It was so like, my God, what a real movie! But it is. It's a Chinese movie made by Chinese people, and it's great that these things are slowly also starting to happen. And I hope that there will be a lot more like that, and with the women looking a little bit less dead, because in some scenes the women look so passive that I'm thinking it's almost necrophilia. I'm not kidding, but yeah.
Hi. You kind of broached the subject in passing.
Hey, Dave, we are streaming.
I'm
streaming, so people can hear.
Alright, you kind of broached the subject in passing of the feminist, submissive, blah 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 sides of all this. We in the West have at least a fairly wide slice of pornography to choose among. Does it not reinforce very effectively for the government their message that porn is bad, to have the principal porn be pretty much rape fantasies and so on and so forth?
Actually, I think it reinforces their fantasy that patriarchy is good, most of all. I mean, I think that they're very little feminist ideas, the Chinese government. They're not interested in promoting, so they don't attack porn from a feminist angle. Yeah, so this is what you're saying, right? That they could condemn it for its patriarchal or sexist or violent values. That's never part of the discourse, actually. Right? So they are just more blunt. They're just banning all porn because it's bad. They don't tell you why it's bad. But since I showed you, there is actually a porn industry, and so they actually turn a blind eye on the porn industry, and a lot of it has this kind of patriarchal messaging. So I think that goes hand in hand. They like domination fantasies, and specifically like to see domination fantasies involving a Japanese person. They obviously also fantasize themselves as a person, who can conquer the Japanese female. So, I mean, there's a lot of psychology that says that they secretly really want that kind of porn. It's the women or the feminists that should speak up, maybe, or could speak up and go like, this is too violent and this is not really arousing for us or whatever, without going into the fucking Western anti-porn feminism, hopefully, right? I mean, so we have to tackle that from a different angle and not repeat this dichotomy that's been hanging here, hopefully in the West. So that's also what I'm interested in, that thing going along, the discussion and kind of alternative productions coming along in art, but without getting into this gridlock that has shaped Western thinking about pornography.
You had something else to say.
How about much more soft?
I can't get a word to that.
It doesn't involve actual.
Okay, just repeat the question. Was about softcore stuff. Is there softcore stuff?
Is there a more feminist vision out there with
a
lot of softcore?
There's not a lot, actually.
Why is softcore more feminist? I have to throw that in there.
No, I'm saying the hardcore obviously isn't. So I'm saying.
Why is hardcore obviously not feminist? That's.
Well, no, the hardcore is definitely not feminist. I'm not saying it's an error.
Okay.
Actually,
yeah, so feminists could favor a more softcore depiction, right, of sexuality. Not all feminists agree with that. I know that. But that could be, of course, and I do hear that from Chinese women, that they're put off by Japanese pornography. And they're not actually aware of alternative products or softcore products.
I think hardcore versus softcore and feminist versus non-feminist are two totally different questions. I have a related question about hardcore pornography. Do they show genitalia in their porn? And if they don't, is it because there is greater law enforcement against that?
No, they show everything. Because it's all, whatever I've shown, all porn is underground, all porn is illegal. So what that means is that they actually don't have government regulations about it. So a lot of Japanese porn is filtered, right? It has a filter on the genitals.
Yes, yes.
So they, again, in China, they'll get anything Japanese with filters, without filters. But you know, they are underground shadow industries of the, you know, the actual companies, so they can do whatever they like. And obviously, that's how also that's one motivation I hear a lot in the porn user. They say they want to keep it like that. They don't want government regulations. They're completely mistrustful of government ratings or getting to a Western type system where there would be government ratings of those movies. Yeah.
I have a question.
There you go.
You described the amateur porn that was being produced in settings that look like university computer rooms or perhaps commercial computer rooms. And I was wondering if you talked about those being locatable.
Right.
Is there are those real computer rooms, and is this perhaps a way of saying that's a computer room you can go to where you can get uncensored internet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether there's a torrent or whether there's some sort of breach of the firewall. So not only is there pornography, but that a shop there, mm-hmm. but that it's a space where those computers are free.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a very good question. I would like to find out more about that. And I haven't been able to find out if even these movies are faked or not. I mean, I think a lot of them obviously are, but then some of them are not. So, I'm not sure. I still have a conclusion. No, it's okay. It doesn't matter.
I was curious if you knew or were familiar with or had an opinion on the case of the group sex group that got, you know, busted and sent to prison.
I mean, the professor?
Professor Mao.
So he was sentenced to 11 years, I believe. Or maybe I'm wrong about the number of years, but so basically he was a swinger and a university professor, and so they found out somehow that he'd been doing this, and this is totally illegal in China. So a lot of people are obviously doing that. A lot of people are using internet sites to find swingers, other swinging couples or hookups. The whole internet romance hookup scene is very much alive there, but then sometimes they make those random arrests, and then you see that over and over again. When they do make an arrest, they'll go all the way. He tried to defend himself, and then I also noticed that there's actually only one scholar in Beijing, Dr. Li Yunye. I don't know if you heard of her. She's China's most famous sexuality scholar, and she always has to defend sexual minorities, and radical people, and people are interested in alternative sex. She's the one who usually stands up and defends people, but she's the only one. She's the, for the whole of the big China we're talking about. So she still did defend Professor Ma. She said this is ridiculous because it didn't do any harm to the people he was having sex with. It was all consensual. It should be, you know, we should choose to have his own lifestyle and so on. But basically, no other intellectuals defended him. So I was pretty surprised to see that, actually. And I was very shaken by that incident. That kind of stuff's really hard. And for me also to discuss that with my Chinese colleagues, although in Hong Kong it's much better, but still they would still pretty much have that, officially have that same opinion. Yeah? My conclusion.
Okay, conclusion.
It's not so much a conclusion to everything I said, but I just feel that we have to look at some other things that are going on in China, like the bloggers. I mean, bloggers, and specifically people people who write candidly about their sex lives and often upload images with it, they are really doing a lot of great work, I think. And that includes more variety, like Mizume, maybe you've heard of her. She's the pioneering blogger, sex blogger in China. She came out with the famous quote, if you want to interview me. And she's really cool and very candid and defending the one-night stand, defending in defense of casual sex. Very smart, interesting, and she got a lot of traffic, of course, and then also her sites were all banned at some point. After working here on Chan Chan, she's also funny, sexy, has a lot of galleries, and she did this funny action where she collected pictures of limp penises, and she got a lot of men actually sent their pictures. And, she argued that the limp penis is the more natural state of the penis, and so that's why she collected that. Lilia Swallow, she's the most famous blogger right now. She's also on Twitter. She became famous again for uploading naked pictures, and that's her on this. But these are more recent pictures. These aren't the ones that made her famous many years ago. But then she became a sex workers activist. She really is doing a lot of work through a website to give information to sex workers and to defend the legal rights of sex workers in China. That's also, again, this is quite amazing because they have no legal rights whatsoever. And so she's kind of this one woman's movement. And she's very courageous by just doing all this updating on Twitter the whole time. And she's probably totally tracked by the government. But somehow she's just going along and doing it. So I think she's great. And then there's artists like Yuna and Julon. They did a series of photographs. She's a former sex worker, became an artist. And the images are called Solution Scheme. And so she's the sex bomb, but she controls the photography. She has the cable to make the picture in her hand. A lot of people say that she's the dominant in the scene, and she, you know, as compared to the sort of boring government officials surrounding her. But I think her facial expressions also show that she's bored. She's actually sort of deconstructing the whole hype around sex work and sexuality, I think. She looks sexy, and she's shining compared to those people who fall asleep around her. But if you look at, you can find those pictures online, you have to, if you see like many of them, you see she also has this expression of boredom and repetition, like going like, no, it's not exciting, this is not exciting. So there's, I think she deconstructs the kind of the power dynamic between the sex client and the sex worker to some extent. And then I want to end with Xu Ding, who's a friend of myself, a Hong Kong artist, and she knows Johannes because we all did this performance in Videotage. And she is a kind of an artist exhibitionist who posts sort of naked pictures online. And you can find her on Facebook, Xu Ding. She posts almost every day. She's very candid. She also has a blog. A lot of her pictures on Facebook get deleted, of course, but she knows how to deal with all that. She puts little tags on it, or she puts it on her blog. She's very savvy about how to post despite the various layers of censorship. I like these pictures where she's this tiny little figurine that she made in front of all the buildings she ever lived in Hong Kong. So she's actually a person who had to leave home when she was very young, and she moved to all these different high-rise buildings. And then in later life, she traveled back to all the buildings she lived in and did these naked photographs. And I think they're cute because they show that she's tiny. I mean, you cannot see her, basically. And she's fragile, right? So the human body is lost amongst this anonymous high-rise architecture, and that's what makes it interesting to me. Also, she just does that. She will just take off her clothes and go stand in the middle of a square like that, where at least, you know, 10,000 people can see her from there. And that's very, I really think that's amazing. That you know, that is very courageous and nice. And this is a picture of her home space, and this is a picture we made together. Yeah.
Aww.
Katrin Jacobs. Okay, maybe one or two more questions, and then we have to move on. Okay, first
he, then you.
Okay. I know this wasn't a technical lecture here, but what interests me is how do you actually get porn when in being in China and when having all these restrictions? Do you know any tech?
No. You can either buy them.
Yes, microphone.
Find them on street markets. So they are not official markets, but you know, if you're a guy walking through the street, somebody will approach you and show one of two of them, and then they'll take you upstairs to a separate room. And so it's very easy. Actually, most cities have this kind of porn supply, PCDs or DVDs. They're called movies of life in Chinese. So like during the movie of life, you're walking through movie of life, and then they take you upstairs to the lower room, and then there's a whole bunch of things. That's the first channel, and I've been told by my students that offers only very mainstream and mostly Japanese stuff, and the second channel is of course the internet. Yeah? So you can actually find these illegal internet sites in Chinese. Yeah, and they migrate the whole time. So basically, they are points to URL, and then if you go there, they'll lead you to the next. Yeah, they keep changing. I don't know the technical word for that, but they're very savvy about trying to change location, and they're mostly sitting on overseas servers, even though that doesn't make them prevent any kind of censorship. I mean, you know, it's just not allowed to exist whether you're hosted by an overseas server or not. But still, most people are hosting their porn sites on an overseas server. So it's very easy to get porn. Actually, did an experiment in the Starbucks in Shenzhen. Shenzhen is the border town with Hong Kong. So I was wondering how easy or difficult it would be to find porn, or if you would have to have a VPN network to jump over the firewall or not. So we went to the Starbucks. I went with like four or five students. And I said, okay, let's try to find porn and see how long it takes. And it took like 3 minutes to find really explicit images. So it's very easy to... No, actually my students knew like one major porn site address, so we just started with that, and then that led us to all the other addresses. And so, but in the Starbucks, that was not filtered, the Starbucks in Shenzhen. So, I mean, yeah, so that means that porn is alive and kicking in China.
I was just reading about this on Twitter just yesterday. There was some novelist who was arrested for writing a novel of which porn was the subject. The novel itself wasn't even pornographic. It was just about pornography. And that was reason enough, apparently, to arrest him. Now, with all this other porn out there, and they arrest this novelist, do they frequently maybe use the government, use porn as a pretext to go after people they don't like and just leave other people alone who are more neutral?
I think what's being said is that it's not so much individuals, yeah? So, okay, they do arrest artists who do make obscene art. Like, comedians are being arrested too now under these three vulgarities actions. They've started targeting comedians. You hear stories like that, but what is much more dangerous is if you have political views against the government. So sex is in a way much more safe. So I'm curious to hear about that latest incident. But of course, they are using in a more big, in a much grander way, they are using pornography to just step up internet surveillance in general. So that gives them an excuse to just to go full blast on deleting, on hiring more. The way it's really being done is by hiring netizens, right? I mean, it's really like this kind of internal governance. So they are hiring more and more of these netizens groups, and they're now being paid also, so they're increasing the wages of these bloggers and netizens. So that is really, really very tricky, because that means that you're even your peers, your fellow bloggers, could easily be working for the government. So this kind of duplicity, you really don't know what people are up to. They may be fervent bloggers, like not activists, but just bloggers, but they may at the same time be working for the government.
Is that connected with the so-called human flesh searching?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's an interesting article here on China Geeks, and I think we should block that with the Irish hashtag on Twitter or something.
Yeah. There are actually a lot of articles from June and July saying that porn is now unblocked.
It's
unblocked?
Unblocked in China, really?
Mm-hmm.
Since June or July. Mm-hmm.
That's I would love to see that, because actually the government warnings against porn have also stepped up in June and July, so it's confusing.
Confusing, yeah. Okay, one last statement from you, and then we have to move on. So I looked at the map up there. How did they track porn consumption for Taiwan?
I don't think they did Taiwan, actually.
But it's on the map.
Sorry, my map. What is my map?
Know your map.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
It's a very small dot.
Yeah. Well, very good question.
It's Taiwan.
Okay, I'll have to ask them. I don't know. I mean, why wouldn't it be possible to monitor sexually the Taiwanese internet? I mean, they use sort of like their own surveillance system to filter web content. They looked at all this website and did content analysis of major websites. And so I don't know. Yeah, I think they could easily look into Taiwan as well. I think the funny thing is that they actually came out with this graphic because of the fact that officially, unless I missed some information there, the government is still really upholding that pornography does not exist. But then these colors, blue and so on, they officially brought out a sort. Now all of this research is also, of course, monitored by the government, right? So I think this is maybe this is kind of supported by government, this whole article coming out. Maybe it is a new step in saying we do have a porn industry. Maybe, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure about it because, the politics of how these things get published and why is very unclear. But, and again, there's no writing, there's no scholarly writing about porn whatsoever, so these are very rare things to come out of China itself.
Yes, so looking forward to buying your book as soon as it's published. And of course, it will happen sometime next year. Katrine's talk today will of course be in Iris Electronica, the book number 4, and number 3 and number 4, the books from last year's Iris Electronica, and next year, and this year's Iris Electronica will be out next year. And if you have not seen it yet, there's the red and the yellow Ars Electronica book from 2007 and 2008 is on the book stand and the entry table with Günther, so please buy a copy. We don't want to bring them back to Austria. Yeah. Okay, big applause.
Thanks
for catching.